body here to the Second Court of Appeals this afternoon. We have two cases that are being argued on our 1:30 docket. I understand everybody is here and has checked in with our clerk. And let me introduce the panel that you have here today. To my left is Justice Dabney Basil. To my right is Justice Wade Birdwell, and I'm Elizabeth Kerr. So if we're all ready, we'll call the first case.
The court will now call in the matter of D.K. A. Child. May it please the court, Seth A. McClure will argue for the appellant, D.K. Matthew J. Whitten will argue for the appellee, the state of Texas.
Okay. You may proceed. Yes.
Please, panel, opposing counsel. Today we're here about the Chapter 62.352 and interpreting what the legislature want here. It's not easy. So Chapter 62.352B1 allows for the deferring of a decision on requiring registration under this chapter, which is sex offender registration, until the respondent has completed treatment for the respondent's sexual offense as a condition of probation or while committed to the Texas Juvenile Justice Department. Now, obviously, here the legislature wanted a way for a young offender, juvenile offender, to not be publicly registered, not be privately registered, but seek help, get help, and if they successfully complete treatment, then they won't have to register. That's what.
But the statute doesn't say that if they successfully complete treatment, then they don't have to register, does it?
No, it does not. It says upon successful or unsuccessful completion, and I think that's to give the state an opportunity to say, well, maybe they officially completed, but this behavior shows that they didn't actually adopt what the treatment said to do or something to that effect.
Doesn't it actually say following successful completion of treatment, the respondent is exempted from registration under this chapter?
It does, but then in C says that the
That is C.
It says then the court retains the jurisdiction, and that the state can bring this motion, and so that's what we're here before is how long does the state have to bring that motion that says okay he did complete, so we're not going to he completed, but the state can come forward, and if they don't, it will be deferred. If they do, we'll hear that motion and decide whether
So how do you distinguish the NRA case out of the 14th?
Honestly, I think it was wrongly decided. I think they looked at JM, which I think is actually a good analysis. The legislature wanted to give the opportunity for after finishing TJJD at the time TYC, or for after completing the program, give the state some time to get that report that's due in 5 days and to have some time to file this motion and have this hearing. So I think
is registration as a sex offender considered to be part of the sentence?
No,
in the juvenile?
It's my understanding that it is separate. The set 62 would be controlling for that, and then chapter 54 would
No. My question is that that's not part of the sentence at all?
No, I would say it's a result of the sentence. So the sentence is given, and if regardless of the sentence, it's not part of the sentence. It's part of if they're convicted of an offense that is under Chapter 62, then separately this registration can be required in different ways.
But in terms of the actual sentence that was issued, there are two of them, correct? There's the original intensive supervision.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay, which was then modified due to a reoffending of a non-sexual manner.
Yes.
So that was modified. So there's a modified intensive supervision finding.
Yes, sir.
But that's a probation. Okay, if he completes all of the things that he's supposed to complete, including the treatment, then that ends, the probationary period ends August 24th of 2016, correct?
That is correct.
So the probation ends.
Yes.
At that point in time, okay? So if the registration is a part of the sentence, then would you not be in a situation if he's completed his probation, okay? He's fully discharged his sentence at that point in time, has he not?
I would agree. I don't know.
But you're saying it's actually not part of the sentence, and because of that, the probation, the ending of the probation doesn't matter with regard to whether or not the state can still come back and go, oh, gee, we need to make sure this guy registers.
That's how I read the separation of 62 from 54. That 62 is just generally kind of separate from both the adult and the juvenile punishment part, and is a whole separate thing. Regardless, if you're an adult, you're going to get registered. You know, if you're a child, we have three options.
How have the courts dealt with registration from a, say, an Eighth Amendment standpoint? Have they considered it to be punishment? Have they considered it to be part of the sentence? Is what language with regard to Chapter 62, Chapter 54 are you looking to say that the registration is not part of the sentence?
The case law is sparse. I would say that the language in 62 is almost always protection of the public and not for punishment. And it's kind of separate that no matter what, this is what we're doing. And so I would say that because the judge really, in especially the adult cases, has far less discretion than they do punishment in general, that I don't read that as to having, say, it's a punishment per se. I think 62 tries to make it for the protection of the public. Now, I honestly didn't look as far as the Eighth Amendment goes. I really didn't look too
well. The reason is clear. You would agree that there's no deadline in the statute itself.
There's no hard deadline.
There's no hard deadline in the statute itself. Okay. There's a hint because of the 10-day deadline for the provider to give notice of successful completion, but that's a hint, and it doesn't actually say anything that there must be a response under these circumstances. So as you stand here today right now, you don't have any basis for saying because this is part of the punishment, because he successfully finished his probation, that the last day that they could have come back and said, oh, by the way, we know effectively he's not been registered, you know, until we filed our motion, you know, 3 years after, but you still have jurisdiction to come back, even though he's successfully done everything he was supposed to do, even under the modified sentence.
I agree with you. I haven't seen that case law, even in adults, that would be a punishment part, so no, I don't see that. What I see is this gives jurisdiction to the court to have this hearing. That's what Chapter 62 does. This is, to me, a jurisdictional thing. Chapter 62 gives the juvenile court jurisdiction to do three things, and it limits on the third thing because the first two are easy. Public and non-public registration, you do that right at the end. You decide, was it a sex offense, and then you do it. But then the third one, you have to then extend what the court would normally have jurisdiction under 62. And they extended it and didn't put a deadline, but they put we're extending it so that, to me, what the legislature was trying to do, the child can receive treatment and the court can still have jurisdiction upon either unsuccessful. I think they wanted to address the successful treatment, that it's automatic, but then they went, well, the state probably should have some say in that maybe some person who completed treatment actually wasn't reformed, and therefore they have an argument to come back and rehear it.
But the language of the statute is pretty broad. Subsection C says the court retains discretion and jurisdiction to require at any time during the treatment or on the successful or unsuccessful completion of treatment.
Yes, and
but where's the temporal limit there?
Well, that's upon the successful or unsuccessful completion. That's a temporal limit. They're, at some point, they successfully complete or don't complete. For us to remove a temporary limit removes that whole sentence. There's no reason to have it.
But isn't turning 18 sort of a built-in temporal limit?
That's where I think, with all due respect, Appellee's brief was wrong. There is nothing in Chapter 62 that says anything about 18 except before or after, it doesn't matter. I don't believe Chapter 62, the 18 is a law anywhere except to clarify that, hey, we understand Chapter 54 has 18 as a law. We are saying we're ignoring that.
Well, so in theory, I mean, do you think the state would take the position that if DK were now 37 years old, that they could go back and say, okay, juvenile court, you deferred the decision, now let's make him register?
I think if you don't have that temporal limit, they can until 29, which is 10 years after the juvenile leaves, at 28, they could do the same thing. I truly believe that. I don't see where the limit is, because 18 is not the limit. It says several times.
So what sort of limit are you asking us to build in here?
Again, because they didn't give us an actual limit, I think the analysis under JM, which I cited in mine, is the correct analysis. Were they trying to register this kid? Were they paying attention? Was it a procedural thing? Why didn't they immediately, upon receiving notice of successful treatment or unsuccessful treatment, why didn't they do it? I think this could, unfortunately, the appeals court has to do that, the higher courts have to do this, which is, we understand they didn't give a direct time period, but here's where we're saying it's unreasonable, and here's where we're saying it's reasonable. I think JM was the correct analysis. I think RA did an incorrect extension of that analysis and added things that they didn't need to add. And I think this court, in this case, added on to that even more and pretty much gutted those.
Do you think it makes any difference to the analysis that DK was apparently continuing to engage in poor behavior choices?
Not according to the law. According to the law, as long as this is open, which again, if you take off the limit, is until he's 29, there's nothing that says here it has to be sexual and offense. In fact, none of DK's further offenses were sexual in nature.
Let me ask you this. Was there a break in the jurisdiction with regard to the juvenile conduct? In other words, we know that there was an original intensive supervision order, okay?
Yes.
He then, in the original probationary period that was created by that original order, he reoffended, was brought back, and his violation of probation was part of the new offense, and then a modified intensive supervision order was entered, which gives us this August 24th, 2016 deadline. But it was a new probationary period predicated upon the violation of his original probation plus the new offense, okay? And he was ordered to successfully complete sexual offender treatment as part of this probation. So he had to successfully complete this treatment to comply with his probation.
Okay? That's correct, and there was
So my question is, did he effectively discharge everything that he was required to do with regard to his probation and to the sentence, that modified sentence, and did he effectively discharge himself from the jurisdiction of the juvenile court at that point in time when that occurred?
So,
or was there a continuing, was he still in custody or whatever?
Until he turns 18, if it's a 18 in general, or 17 if he doesn't have a new one. They, of course, under Chapter 54, for punishment of whether he committed a crime, they always have. But I think I'm answering the question when I say, when he completed, he did successfully complete probation, and he successfully completed treatment. I would say that under JM, when he successfully completed treatment, that started the clock running on this motion to register him. When he successfully completed probation, they had no jurisdiction over that original case. They had to wait till he committed a new offense to get jurisdiction over him.
And so the new offenses wasn't like what we have in the criminal law, where it's a deferred adjudication, they reoffend, and then there is a motion to adjudicate. So this was not a motion to adjudicate based upon the original or the modified probationary order.
No, he had completed the original, so an adult, he would have completed his deferred.
But it's your understanding that the issue of the registration is separate and distinct from the sentence, and therefore that is something that could in fact roll over even though he successfully completed his, if you will, juvenile sentence with regard to the original matter.
I would say that it ended when he finished his treatment under the statute. that their jurisdiction for the state to to file the motion and the court to hear the motion stopped when he completed treatment, successful or unsuccessful.
Okay, this where do you find in the language of subsection C that clock?
It says at any time during the treatment or on the successful or unsuccessful completion of treatment. That's
so
what it says.
So it turns on the word on?
Yes.
Well, one last question, and I know you need to finish up. It's clear, you're saying it because you can always come back, okay? And you can under 301 as well, okay? You can come back at any point in time, even if you've gone beyond 18 years of age, and ask the court to exempt you from further reporting and further registrations. So 301 at least gives the courts continuing jurisdiction to hear a petition of exemption. Is that correct? You can answer.
That is correct, and as of right now, every juvenile lawyer that I know is right now deciding that at the end of the period they are going to ask for it to be officially not registered so that we don't face this.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, counsel.
A response?
May it please the court, counsel. The answer to the question, did the juvenile court retain jurisdiction to make a decision on whether to require registration as a sex offender following the deferral and completion of the treatment? If you look, Justice Birdwell, at Article 62.351, I do think we have to say that the registration, Chapter 62 matters, are separate from the disposition of the case. Subsection A of that statute says, during or after disposition of a case under Section 5404 Family Code for adjudication of an offense for which registration is required under the chapter, and it goes on to talk about what we've gotten into. And if you look at RA, which we've talked about already, it discusses that and says that the Chapter 62 matter is separate from the disposition of the case. So whether when the appellant here, when his probation ended, the trial court still retained jurisdiction to decide on these Chapter 62 matters. The delay in moving for registration as a sex offender did not cause a loss of jurisdiction. Article 62.352 says if a court enters the deferral order, it retains jurisdiction to address the reporting issue at any time during treatment or on successful or unsuccessful completion of treatment.
Of course, the 14th was troubled by just a 7.5-month delay, and here we're talking about several years. So to the extent that we're uneasy about that, how would you allay that uneasiness?
My response to that would be that the system was worked here exactly as it was designed to operate. And what I mean by that is to remember the purpose of the juvenile code, of family codes. purpose as a matter of policy with respect to rehabilitation of juvenile offenders. We, I think, could agree that it would be unwise to rush any juvenile offender or any child that's in this system into registration as a sex offender. That, I would suspect, is a big part of the purpose of even giving the power to the court to defer that decision for a period of time. And so if we follow that principle of the juvenile code.
Counsel, what do you make of the fact that 351 says that you've got a petition for an order, And then 352 says the court can enter an order deferring entering an order. Okay, and but that deferral of entering an order, then you've got language that says if he successfully completes, he is exempt. It doesn't say about the court shall enter an order of exemption. It just flat says he is exempt. And there wasn't even an order of exemption entered in this case. He basically just entered an order of deferral, and then everybody went on their happy way until, oops, he reoffended on a non-sexual matter 3 years after the fact, and we're back here going, oh, gee, Judge. So what are we to make of the fact that even internally the language of this specific area doesn't match up with what the court, what the legislature said? The legislature says an order of exemption has to be entered, and then creates a situation where an order of exemption is automatic without the entering of an actual order.
Well, under...
Because technically, if y'all had never come back...
Yes.
Okay. Then no order would have been entered of exemption, but as a practical matter, he wouldn't be registering.
Because he successfully completed treatment. That is the you're right, the default setting, so to speak, on the code. But under 350,
in fact, he doesn't even have to come back and ask and come back and file, you know, ask for a rehearing of the original petition and say, Judge, I've successfully completed this. Can you enter an order now? The statute just flat says he's exempt.
But then it puts the burden on the state with that unless language, if I'm reading it right, unless a hearing is held on motion of the prosecuting attorney, which is what.
Yes, Your Honor. It goes on to say that under a motion of the prosecuting attorney, then a hearing may be held. It says, following successful completion of treatment, the respondent is exempted from registration under this chapter unless a hearing under this subchapter is held on motion of the prosecuting attorney. And it, the next clause I do want to point out next says, regardless of whether the respondent is 18 years of age or older. I want to clarify one thing. We do not argue in our brief that the 18th birthday is some kind of cutoff point for this or end deadline. We agree that Chapter 62 confers a separate kind of jurisdiction on the court outside of the disposition of the case. Our position is not that the 18th birthday would end the timeline. As a matter of fact, I think the appellant in this case will be 18 next month.
Basically agree the only timelines when the period to require registration lapses?
We could have asked for better guidance from the legislature, obviously. But the clock, if it's running, the problem is there is no clock the way this statute is written. The juvenile court, because it retains jurisdiction over Chapter 62 matters, we don't have a clear answer of where, how far this goes into the future, but we do know that it's not, if we follow the appellant's reasoning to make the cutoff sometime shortly after the 10-day period for reporting is up or something like that, something that's not written in the statute, we would frustrate the purpose of the juvenile code, which is to give time for these children who are in the system to be rehabilitated, to reform themselves, and hopefully not become part of the adult system. So to make my point, as I said earlier, this system here then operated just like it was designed. That may be why the RA court said the duty to register arises from Chapter 62, and the duty to register is not part of the juvenile court's final disposition. And so things only came to a head here, even though he had completed probation on that offense. He then picked up new offenses, and that's when things came to a head, And in the interest of public safety, which is the purpose of Chapter 62, the state filed its motion. Even though that's well after, to the court's concern, well after the completion of treatment and completion of his probation, we had not, it is a factor, I think, that we have not reached his 18th birthday and that the statute does not have a deadline. This is something that the trial court, a tool that they can use to protect the public, but also maintain the purpose of the juvenile code.
How is a juvenile offender to know whether or not they're committing a crime by not registering if they don't have an order of exemption under this statute?
Well, the default is that they would not be required to register. And because that is the default, Your Honor, maybe I'm not understanding the question.
I understand it's a default, mm-hmm. but ordinarily the statute says you have to register if you are convicted of certain.
Yes.
Okay. And that's not part of the disposition. That's a statement of public policy that anyone convicted of this has to register under these circumstances. And the court can exempt, the trial court can exempt, okay?
Correct.
The trial court can defer making a decision about exemption. But then the statute appears to say, well, exemption if you've successfully done that. But as, like in this case, they didn't even report it to the court or to prosecuting attorney that, in fact, there was a successful completion. So how is that not creating some type of limbo with regard to possible further refer? Now, y'all didn't come back and say he didn't register, therefore he committed another offense. Clearly, but again, you should have some type of definitive statement as to whether or not you're obligated to register or not.
I believe I understand the question, and the only answer I can give you is that on the facts of this case, fortunately, that did not occur. I suspect that under normal circumstances, the trial court would be required to enter some kind of order requiring registration before a duty to register would inure to the defendant in a case like that. But then I'm getting off a little, I suspect, into the weeds. In this case, we don't have that problem. We do have the problem of a delay. And our position is that it did not cause the trial court to lose jurisdiction. And as I pointed out in the brief, even though the court in RA perhaps expressed some reservation about a 7-month delay, that did not turn into a loss of jurisdiction. And it is, I think, debatable whether the court in RA was even correct to assume that the interests of all the stakeholders would be best served by an immediate motion. Because like I said before, this, if we view this as a tool that the trial court can use to both implement the purpose of the Juvenile Justice Code and protect the public, then it's a win-win situation. That is all I have. The state prays that the trial court's order be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Reply?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to, start by clarifying what really happens. And I think this is a problem of what the legislature intended and then not being connected to what the courts are actually doing. What should happen, by my reading, is the court exempts the child. The child completes treatment. They send a notice to the court saying they completed treatment, and then at that point, the court should, as Mr. Birdwell seemed to be alluding to, the court should enter an order saying that there is no registration. That's what a deferral period is. So they've completed treatment. That's why they have the notice from the successful completion, and then they're given the notice. That's what should happen. That is not what is happening at all anywhere that I've been, and I've done lots of these. What's happening is it goes on forever. The deferred is entered, and then it's assumed that once he completes treatment, since there is no motion by the state, then they're done. That's what every attorney assumes. That's what every respondent assumes. And I think that's fair to the respondents that they did their part in doing what they were told to do in order to not be registered as a sex offender. Now, he says this is in this particular case, that's what DK did. He did what he needed to do to not be registered as a sex offender in his mind. It was deferred until on completion. He completed probation. He was done. He was outside. Then he comes back on unrelated non-sex offenses, and years later, he's now registered as a sex offender. Now, I think that is not what the legislature intended. I think that is not just. And to address what the limitation actually is, JMRA, there's another one that JM cites.
Let me ask you this, counsel.
Yes.
Subsection C, now my questions up to this point in time have inferentially concluded that the deferral is a deferral of an order of exemption. But C actually says the deferral includes an order requiring registration. Why should we not read C in a manner that simply says that if the court defers, it stays the registration requirement until it makes a further order, either requiring registration or exempting registration, and then sets the parameters for either of those orders to be entered as having to come after successful or unsuccessful, and upon the motion of the prosecuting attorney, if in fact there is a successful completion of treatment.
I think I understand your question. My answer is the successful or unsuccessful completion of treatment language. There is no reason to have that language if it's not a limitation. You can just say it's deferred until probation is over. You could say it's deferred until a motion from the court, and then it will go exactly how it is going now, which is until a motion from the state, it is deferred. They could have said that and left on the successful or unsuccessful completion of treatment. Not only did they put that in, but every court has concentrated on that, including the ones who had addressed this for before 18.
One question, and this will be your last question. If we find that the court did have jurisdiction, you've challenged the court's consideration of the 2018 offenses, okay? Is that not effectively waived because your very own expert took into account those offenses in making a determination of moderate chance of reoffending in a sexual manner?
Under the standards under 62, I believe just that they could be considered waived with that testimony. And more importantly, the standard just doesn't allow for me to even just doesn't give me a good enough standard to even argue that these were non-sexual offenses that he did complete. It's so low that's why it's so important that we keep it to this thing so that when someone's 28 and they commit a misdemeanor, that someone who's really mad at this person, or let's say they get found not guilty of a crime, they haven't done any crimes, they can still have this hearing. Nothing says that you have to repeat offenses in order for to have this hearing. This hearing is not based on any further action from the respondent. It's based on action from the state, which is this motion. So technically, I could get a not guilty on someone, and some DA could be angry and decide to hold this motion because when I was 14, I had a sexual offense. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Your case is submitted, and you're free to go or.